This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com. This is part two of a two-part podcast. If you'd like part one, you'll find it at PersonalLifeMedia.com. Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and you're going to hear John Battelle in my two-part series this week. John is the founder, chairman, and CEO of Federated Media Publishing. He's also one of the producers of the Web 2 Summit, and he's also launched a new event about conversational marketing. On last week's show, we started out discussing conversational marketing and Web 2.0, and we were right in the middle of talking to John more about the things that he touches on in his search blog, which he's been doing for a number of years. We left off last week talking about what Microsoft should do to counter the threat by Google. And the next question up, we'll bring John on the show, will be to talk about Google, something that he knows an awful lot about.
You know, when you try to boil as many oceans as Google is currently attempting to boil, it is hard to surprise the world. The company was built on magic. The magic being that you put something into this box and you hit return and you got what you wanted. And that was a magic moment for millions of people that created the brand that is Google today. They'll hit a cycle there, and they'll also hit a cycle when they realize that in order to be a media company, you need to act like one. And that means that you have to be in the media business. It's very hard to make money in mobile. And it's very hard to figure out from a marketer standpoint how to get return on investment. I think the biggest problem with video is demand. I know that people are saying, God, look at how many videos are being watched on Yahoo or MSNBC or CNN, or, you know, there's a ton of video being consumed. There's no question about it. But is it being consumed in a way that's being driven by our habit of search? And I think the answer to that is no. I've gotten reasonably good at it in terms of making it all fit together. I think FM is an expression of the work I did on the book, the work I do on the blog, the insights I gleaned from producing Web 2 and working with great people like Tim O'Reilly. And, you know, I think it all kind of comes together.
Let's welcome John to the show. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Hey, thanks so much for doing a two-part series with me. I had so many, literally, as I was walking into the studio, I could see my emails, bing, 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 questions were coming in, and I thought, oh, God, what am I going to do? Everybody has questions for you. So thank you for giving us the time to do a two-part series. You're the only other two-part series I've ever done besides my interview with Woz. So it's great to have you here, and the pithy comments you gave us last week were unbelievable. There's so much good content there that I'm excited to have you on again to talk in more depth about what's happening in the world of Web 2.0. We're going to talk about blogvertising. We're going to talk about rock and roll running and all kinds of fun things too. So this is the dishiest mix part. As we get through it, we'll get to know more about you. So when we left off last week, the question from Steve Buston, who's an internet advertising consultant, was, what surprises, excites, and disappoints you most about Google's current market strategy?
You know, maybe the surprise and the disappointment are about the same, which is my expectations are probably too high for the company. So I'm disappointed I'm not surprised more, I guess is the way to put it. You know, when you try to boil as many oceans as Google is currently attempting to boil,
it
is hard to surprise the world. The company was built on magic, the magic being that you put something into this box and you hit return and you got what you wanted. And that was a magic moment for millions of people that created the brand that is Google today. I don't think the company has created anything even close to that since, and it is still 98% of its mojo. Now, it has done some amazing things, like, you know, the Google Maps and Earth and so on, but it's trying to reinvent the mobile platform. You know, Godspeed. I hope they do, but that's a hard thing to pull off. You know, it's trying to reinvent energy by trying to get, a replacement for coal through its Google.org philanthropy. You know, again, Godspeed. But my biggest concern is that you can't boil four oceans at once, no matter how many smart people you have. And I'm not sure that the model supports that. And And at some point, distraction comes home to roost.
So how long do you think it'll take before they're doing so many? Do you think they're already doing so many things that they'll lose sight of the golden egg?
I'm almost convinced from what knowledge I have of how the folks at Google think, particularly at the top, that they have a mathematical equation for exactly when that moment's going to come, and they already have a plan to get around it.
So what would you do and what wouldn't you do if you were running Google? Which things would you, what would you lop? I mean, are you really going to lop Google.org and the solution for energy?
No, of course not, because that's really sort of hived away in the, it's all about whether or not, where the leaders focus their energy and their time.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the end of the day that there are a number of things that they're trying to do in the enterprise market. Basically they are trying to reinvent the entire IT stack, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about Microsoft Windows, Microsoft Office, Microsoft Outlook, okay, multi-tens of billions of dollars of revenue quarterly, not annually, quarterly,
mm-hmm.
that they're going after there. That is not a market you're going to win quickly. It's maybe not a market you're ever going to win. I think that the beauty of the thesis is still there, which is they're right. This is all going to the cloud. They're right. There's going to be a different approach to servicing that market. I'm not convinced that they're going to be able to do it. I think the largest Charlie horse in Google's business model actually has to do with the word media, because they are a media company. All
yep.
their revenues are advertising.
And we know the cyclical nature of the media world. They might have had a sea change in bringing those dollars into there, but they will hit a cycle.
They will. They'll hit a cycle there, yep. and they'll also hit a cycle when they realize that in order to be a media company, you need to act like one.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you have to be in the media business, and I think that's the greatest struggle inside the company, which is how do we be in the media business with an engineering mentality?
There's no possible way that culture can support a media mentality.
And so I think the question is, does the media mentality move more towards the engineering technology mentality and mm-hmm. they can meet in the middle, or does it run out of runway before that could happen? And if you look at, and there's a very good example of this, Microsoft. Here's an engineering-driven DNA company. I mean, Bill Gates, you can't get more engineering-driven in DNA than that, trying to be a media company since 1994, when they built Red West and they created MSN and they started going after media. Where they've been successful is where they've really firewalled off a business, the Xbox, right, and done something completely radically different and given them free rein to do it and haven't told them, hey, go sell me more copies of Windows, right? And so Google could learn from that, and I'm sure they have. They are great students of Microsoft.
So this is another question from a listener that kind of segues into that technology, the intersection of technology and media from a slightly different perspective. Shay Park is the founder of a company called AdSpark.com. And she's talking about the information overload situation, blogs, social networking, articles, emails, media outlets. She wants to know if you see any major technological or software advances coming from the media world that would allow consumers to consolidate their information sources and quiet the noise.
Oh, I certainly hope so.
Do you see any? Do you know any? What are you doing?
Well, all I'm doing is twittering, right? I'm just causing more problems. Boy, I just wish you asked me this question 3 years ago when I could have said, hey, have you heard about RSS?
Right.
Readers?
That's the only thing I could come up with. I think they're still clunky as hell.
Yeah, they are. And you have to be of a certain mind for RSS readers to actually be useful for you.
Yes.
And not everyone is of that mind.
Mm-hmm.
But, thank God that's why people like us exist.
To net it all out.
Publishers, editors, what I call curators.
Yes.
Are, I think, have high job stability in the coming years, and the idea of a trusted brand that you turn to for a filter on the world is never going away.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Now it's going away in terms of the way it's been packaged in the past, but I think it's only a more valuable skill, not a less valuable skill. And I genuinely believe that you cannot replace that function with machines. You can only enhance that function with machines. So, the best news editors, the best reporters, the best curators of oddities on the web are those that know how to leverage the machine. But so far, we still haven't figured out a way for the machine to take over that function completely. And I, for one, am happy about that.
So a quick segue into mobile marketing and advertising. Is that something that you track much? I mean, it's another distribution channel for our media content. I'm not sure that's going to solve Shea Park's problem or ours. But Brian Cowley at Ad Infuse, he's the CEO there. He wants to know if you're tracking mobile at all.
Very lightly. Mm-hmm. And the reason is simply this. There's no economic incentive. From the point of view of a publisher, unless you have access to some very valuable content that you have complete control and license over and you can split the baby with the carriers in the United States, it's very hard to make money in mobile, and it's very hard to figure out from a marketer standpoint how to get return on investment. And you know, an open standard for mobile, which Google and others are pursuing, I think could change that game dramatically. I think the iPhone already has, in a way, by basically taking over the idea of an open web. I mean, the first thing people do when they get an iPhone is search on Google. And that behavior, which we've all learned from the web, once translated completely to mobile devices, and I'm not saying it's going to be one for one, but it will translate, will allow for new models that are exciting to start to flourish. But, you know, we are, you know, to use a word in this original definition, retarded when it comes to how to execute, you know, interesting and innovative models on the mobile web.
So here's something that I know you are tracking quite a bit. I'd like your opinion about this. Steve Buston, Internet Revenue Consultant, wants to know your take on video search. What's missing? Where does the industry go over the next 2 years? And what I'd like you to add on is new ad models that you're thinking might pan out from a revenue perspective for content producers in the area of video advertising. So video search, video advertising, kind of hand in glove. We've got to find the stuff to consume it. How do we monetize it?
We're very, and again, I think I've said this three times now, over these two interviews, we're very early in this part of the ballgame. I think the biggest problem with video is demand. I know that people are saying, God, look at how many videos are being watched on Yahoo or MSNBC or CNN, or, you know, there's a ton of video being consumed. There's no question about it. But is it being consumed in a way that's being driven by our habit of search? And I think the answer to that is no. I think it's being consumed because we discover it in other ways. It's right there in front of us on the Yahoo homepage or on our finance page or wherever we happen to be. Video search, I don't want to say it's a, you know, solution in search of a problem, but I don't think we have yet gotten to the point where, as a culture, we expect to find what we're looking for in search when it comes to video, and I don't think we have yet come to the point where we are asking questions and expecting a video response. And that's coming. But we are still a very text-driven culture when it comes to search and when it comes to what we expect back from search. And so there is a trend in search, which is called universal search, of folding in video results, and everybody's doing it. Google, of course, is doing it with YouTube in particular. I think we're getting there. I think YouTube has taught a generation how to search contextually within YouTube. But across the web, we're not there yet.
All right, so we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Federated Media. A lot of people had a lot of questions about how you're doing business, how you're making money, how they can engage, how they can buy from you. So this will be a lot of fun. And before we go, Michael Crossan, the SVP of Advertising for InsWeb, wants to know when you're relaunching the industry standard and buying Technorati.
Oh, well, I'm going to have to say no comment on both of those.
Oh, come on. I thought that was pretty good, too. He was a funny one, isn't he? All right, good. Well, we'll go to a break to thank my sponsors. Thank you, sponsors. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to have this much fun with John Battelle. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and we'll be back in just a second. Stay tuned for part two of two. Listen to Coaching the Life Coach, Business and Marketing Strategies for Growth of Transformational Practices, your guide in the 21st Century Marketplace on personallifemedia.com. We're back. I'm Susan, and I'm with John Battelle of Federated Media, and we're going to talk about Federated Media. We're almost done. We're coming up to the close of the two-part series. This is part two. And John, just give us a level set on Federated right now. How many sites? How many employees? You know, give us the numbers.
Sure. We're in, 4 cities now.
Good for you.
75 people. We have the bulk of our people are here in Sausalito, beautiful Sausalito, north of the Golden Gate Bridge.
You must be hiring.
We are hiring. We are hiring. Please let everyone know we have a lot of open positions.
Okay.
We just completed a very large financing round, as a matter of fact, and we are expanding. We have about 15 people in New York and a couple people in Chicago and Los Angeles, and some relationships internationally as well that we've been developing. So, you know, and this is something I've seen before. We did some similar kind of growth trajectory at Wired and the Industry Standard, but more linear with Federated. Hopefully I've learned a few lessons and not, you know, hired as dramatically and as quickly as we did before, but on a more sort of judicious path.
How many sites are in your network now?
About 170.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And I always think about, in my mind, Federated Media is a rep firm. You are very similar to my company, Personal Life Media. You and I have always thought very similarly about this, the world of publishing and media.
Mm-hmm.
I have 25 shows in my network now, and we co-created some of those shows. Some of those shows are people who were solo or on another network and came to join our network, but we're not the content producers. We might have helped co-create and put someone into their own show. They own the content. It's their business.
Right.
We sell the advertising and support the technology and the infrastructure for them. As I understand it, that's also the Federated model.
That is. You know, I think that the idea of a rep network has a lot of baggage, which is unfortunate.
Well, people confuse it with ad networks, which is a totally different thing.
It is a different thing.
Yeah.
The idea of representation, I think, is a pretty robust idea. But it's based in a very, very simple observation, which is that content creation is decoupled from traditional media companies. People
Right.
can create a really good content experience that's engaging for a community, and they don't need to work for Viacom or Time Inc. or the LA Times.
And also, if they did, a lot of times that content is top-down creation rather
Exactly.
than bottoms-up creation, which is where all the juicy good stuff is.
Right. It's a model that's driven by the cost and capital, you know, resources of distribution,
Yeah.
aggregation, and all that means of production stuff that informed the media model for the last 100 years. But the problem is, you know, the great thing is once you decouple from traditional media models, why you can create boing boing. But the downside is, well, you have boing boing, but you don't have any business around it. You don't have the publishing,
Yeah.
the ad serving, the marketing, the, you know, business development, the operations, the finance, all that stuff you need. That's what FM is for our partners. Now, you know, it's a spectrum. Some people just say, hey, they do a great job selling ads. Other people, you know, we do a lot more than that for them. But so it is a spectrum. But we, you know, the difference between us and what you might consider a traditional rep firm is traditional rep firms tend to be solutions for publishers who have inventory that they don't want to monetize themselves. They have their own sales force and they don't have an office in Atlanta, so they get a rep firm in Atlanta or they get a rep firm in the UK or whatever. We represent the whole enchilada. We are all the inventory and all the potential monetization, you know, outside of, you know, some deals with some authors where they take care of endemic sponsorships that, you know, aren't national brands.
And that's exactly what I do, and the model works well because you can fully support that content creator and take away all the business headaches, monetize it for them. They're usually the people who create can't sell their own stuff, and it feels funny to them.
Yeah.
Stephen Comfort, the VP of Sales at Yumi, who was formerly at Tickle, which is one of my favorite lovely companies, says...
And formerly at Wired.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, God, I forgot about that. Absolutely. So you know him.
Uh-huh.
So Stephen wanted to know what the non-obvious real costs are that big bloggers incur that you at Federated Media help them offset. So video streaming or hosting, or what are some of those things that you do that you can help them with?
Well, that's a good question. You know, one of the beauties of these businesses, you know, is that they don't have huge operating expenses. And if they did, why, you know, FM would probably not be in business. I remember when Boing Boing came to me and said, you know, God damn it, our hosting costs are $250 a month.
Right. Like, yeah.
You know, how many uniques do you have? Oh, 500,000. This was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, you know what? 500,000 uniques, $250 a month. Pretty good deal.
We can do something with it. We can work with that.
You know, but as these businesses grow, they do start to accumulate operating costs. You know, and you know, whether it's legal or accounting or, you know, some of the stuff that they may want to do themselves that we can provide, but, you know, they may want to control themselves. There aren't really any hidden ones except when you go to video. When you get to video, and we were talking about video previously,
mm-hmm.
there are, you know, this is a model that has not yet been squared. where you know the costs of hosting the video need to be borne by ad sales,
right.
And the technology.
The money's not there yet.
The money's not there yet necessarily, and also the technology to do reliable reporting and insertion of ads in real time against various important metrics, whether it be time or demographics or whatever. We haven't yet found a perfect solution. We're working with a number of great companies to deliver what we do deliver, but it is not yet there, and there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of venture-backed companies pushing at that space, so I feel pretty good about solutions coming.
Well, our mutual friend Rob Reed, who produces Web Alert, who is carried on your network, is ecstatically happy with the service that you give him. So I'll give you a little plug there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, Rob was in my office yesterday.
Oh, no way. So I want to go back to the VC world. You've recently taken a Series C from Oak Investment Partners. That was $50 million on a $200 million pre. Awesome. Great job. What I understand about that deal, and there isn't a ton written about it, so let me tell you what I think it was, and then you can correct me if that makes sense. You'd raised about, what, $7.5 million in Angels, Series A, Series B, and then you went and took quite a bit of money after you grew the business to profitability.
Yeah.
And then you also, as I understand it, scuttlebutt and rumors from people, took a little bit, like maybe sold some of your options into that particular deal. Instead of diluting your partners, you sold some money and took some of the cash out of that investment for yourself. I love that. I think the way you did that, if I figured it right, you are terribly smart about how you ran your business for a very low amount of money and then brought in your investors and got yourself as the founder a little bit of cash out of that.
Well, I'll tell you, what I can say about this is that I can't say anything specific. So we can let that hang there, and I can't confirm or deny any of the details.
Sure.
But my philosophy with FM was very much informed by what happened at the Industry Standard and at Wired before that.
Right.
The Industry Standard, we did a financing of about, might get the specifics wrong, but I believe it might be around 20 or 30 million on 120 pre.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very difficult because I had a majority investor who had complete control in IDG. And times
was
came
that
along.
Pat McGovern?
Pat McGovern,
yeah,
yes.
And know him well.
Times came along where, there were opportunities to sell and I wasn't allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
So not only could I not, get anything out of the work I did for 4 years,
right.
Nor could any of my employees, nor could any of the investors who had come in. And that was frustrating for everybody, and Pat had his own reasons, and they're valid. But I realized that I needed to give up as little as possible to get this business started, and it was what I had noticed, a whole raft of entrepreneurs had done in sort of the Web 2.0 timeframe, sort of post-crash, which was you don't need that much money to
get.
And then when it came time to accelerate the business, you saw the opportunity, we had proven the model, now it was time to really go do something big. Why? You needed to go do something big. We went with a backer who has a sterling record and an awful lot of capital.
Oak Investment Partners.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, they've done a lot of deals.
And it's done a lot of deals.
Yeah, they have.
And so we knew that if we wanted to go do something really big,
mm-hmm.
these guys would align right behind us and we, march arm in arm. So we're looking at that and we're looking at a lot of things right now and it's exciting. It's an exciting time. We have a lot of dry powder and we're, eager to put it to work. I'm still the single largest shareholder in the company.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do an event that big, clearly I made the decision that it was time to share power, and not be the only deciding voice in the company anymore. And that's okay. When you make that decision, you do it at a time you're ready to do it.
And
I was ready to do it.
And now you have some capital and a partner to help you move that forward.
Exactly.
And at the same time, you got to make a little money yourself because you worked your ass off with Wired. You worked your ass off with Industry Standard. You're a massive booster for the internet economy. You helped move it forward through all the analysis and the people that you hired. And you didn't get anything for that. And so finally, I'm hoping you got plenty for it. You deserve it, John.
I can't confirm or deny that.
I understand.
I can say I'm very pleased with
Good.
The way the deal went. And
Good.
And, I try not to talk about my personal finances because I've
of
got
course.
Three kids. And,
yeah.
I don't need the world to to think that maybe I'm, you know, worth more than perhaps I am.
Well, whatever you got, I'm happy for you.
Oh, thank you.
I applaud it, and you deserve it.
I'm just very, very pleased to be in charge of a company that has been valued so highly and that has such a bright future.
Absolutely. You got a hell of a sales team there, too.
Oh, we sure do.
So I want to get to, in our remaining minutes, and I know we're going over, and thank you so much for giving me your time. I want to just do the day in the life of John Battelle. You Twitter. You have a blog. Search blog. You have a blog on Federated Media. You do multiple conferences. You run Federated Media. You have three children, a beautiful wife. What's your secret for what's your coping mechanism for managing all this? What are
I've
you doing?
I've been doing it for 20 years. I swear to God, I think it's just habit.
Yeah.
I mean, from a very young age, I had to work and, you know, pay my way through, you know, school when I decided I wasn't going to. I was in the Navy for the first couple of years, and I decided I didn't like that at school, so I dropped out. And my family was like, well, you know, that's nice. Now what are you going to do? And I've always felt that, you know, an imperative to work, and I think now I don't know how to not work, and I work pretty hard. But I've gotten reasonably good at it in terms of making it all fit together. I think FM is an expression of the work I did on the book, the work I do on the blog, the insights I gleaned from producing Web2 and working with great people like Tim O'Reilly. And, you know, I think it all kind of comes together. If I were to stop paying attention, stop, you know, having conversations with people like you, stop engaging with the world through Twitter and blogging and so on, I wouldn't be able to do the job that I do at Federated or the you know, produce the hopefully valuable stuff we produce at Web2O. So it all kind of fits hand in glove. And, you know, there are certainly days when I wish, you know, I could stop doing email at 10 o'clock at night. But I am very, very focused on trying to keep a balance in life and do some things outside of life, that, you know, outside of work life that keep me fed, like yoga and running and, you know, spending time with my family.
So I wanted to hear about Bonnaroo. We're running out of time. Just tell us about the Crowdfire thing that you're doing with Outside Lands that's a result of Bonnaroo. Just briefly, tell everybody what those words mean and then what your Crowdfire thing is.
Bonnaroo,
that's
me. Bonnaroo is a festival in the middle of the farmlands of Tennessee that has an incredible lineup of acts for 3 days, and people all go there and camp.
Yeah.
Tens of that, hundreds.
It's a music festival.
And it is an incredible experience. And it was at Bonnaroo last year when I kind of started to understand the way music was shifting and how people were consuming music was shifting. Of course, it's just like everything else, right? And I noticed also when you go to a concert, you know, people hold up their cell phones and their cameras more than they hold up lighters, right? And they're creating an experience, their own experience of the production. And it struck me that while the music industry is very good at making productions that push out music at people, no one's really producing what the people's experiences are and bringing that into the world. So Crowdfire is something we're doing with the producers of Bonnaroo at Outside Lands, which is sort of Bonnaroo West in San Francisco, August 22 through 24.
Yeah, that overlaps Burning Man. So that's if you're not going to Burning Man, you can.
Does it overlap
Burning
Man? I think it's the weekend before.
You know,
it?
You're right. It's if you go early to Burning Man,
you're going to be very tired if you do both. That's
Okay.
It, basically, we're creating a software platform where people can take those images and their tweets and their Flickr streams and their YouTube videos and whatever else they think is interesting as a media object and throw it into what we call the Crowdfire, kind of like a digital campfire. And it'll become a stream of objects that people can edit and create anything they want from. And the idea is, don't just produce the music, produce the crowd. And let the crowd produce the crowd, right? And so we're very, very pleased that we're in partnership to create Crowdfire. And it's just a brainstorm that kind of came out of when you hang your brain up and stop thinking about work, what happens? You come up with great ideas become work.
Yeah, you come up with the better ones. And it's a fun idea, and it's a great name. Love Crowdfire. Hope you got crowdfire.com.
we got .net for sure. I think
good.
I'm at squatting.com, but I'm not sure.
I hate the squatting. All right. So last thing, if you've listened to Dishy Mix in the past, you know that a lot of times I like to ask people at the very end of the show to either leave us with an aspirational thought or sometimes I've been doing more visualizations. And what I was hoping that you could do today is to just take us in our minds to Mount Tam on your run and give us as much visual description as you can and why you go there and what it's like and how it feels and just
a great question. I never even thought of that. Well, it's a very important part of my existence, I guess, is there's just a it happens once or twice a week. I mean, I exercise every day, but once or twice a week, I just have to go to the bottom of Mount Tam and run up it. just something that needs to, you know, it's almost like there's a certain amount of toxins in the body, and when you start running uphill, you have to push through that, and there's a point where you do push through, and I guess because I've been doing it a long time, it's usually when you hit the ridge, and then you're up on the ridge and you've got a view, and then you can run the ridge for a while, and it's so rewarding to sort of push through that first 20 minutes of hard uphill, and then bang, you're up above Mill Valley, above Corte Madera, you're on the ridge, and you can see, you know, if it's a nice day, you can see Mount Diablo, you know, and the city and everything. And it just gives you a perspective, and you've got your breath, and you're in your breath, and you're just going. And you feel like you could go forever if you didn't have to go pick up your kids or whatever it is you have to do next. But, you know, you get that moment where you've cleansed, you know, you've pushed out the bad or the toxins, and you're sort of at peace, and you're in a rhythm. And I always have, you know, a mix going in my ears that, you know, helps. And I've been doing this since I was an undergraduate at Berkeley. I lived at the foot of the East Bay Hills, and I ran up those almost every single day. Now my aching old body will only let me, you know, pound that, you know, 6 to 10 miles a day as opposed to 20 to 30. But I still, it's just sort of a ritual that I really, really enjoy, and it keeps me sane.
Nice. Well, that's the place to end. We're all enjoying the run with you, John.
Thank you. Well, I certainly... You know, if it weren't for the fact that people are interested in what we do and the work we do, you know, that I've been involved in over the 20 years, I don't, you know, not sure what I would be doing. So it's, you know, always a pleasure to have a chance to talk with folks.
Well, you've given so much to all of us, and thanks so much for giving the time that you gave us over these last two interviews. I'll let you get back to your life. I hope you have a run today.
I actually do. I'm really looking forward to it.
Good. So are we now that we've had a little experience with it. Thanks, John. It was great to have you.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm your host, Susan Bratton. You've gotten to know quite a bit about John Battelle and everything he thinks about. I hope you'll join my Dishy Mix Facebook fan club and forward this episode to a friend. I'm focused, I have intention, on doubling my Dishy Mix listener base between now and the end of the year, and I can't do it without your help. So if you've enjoyed this show, would you think about someone who you know who might also enjoy it, and would you send it to them? Send them a link, forward it in iTunes, whatever works for you. Thanks for sending out the vibes to the universe for me. I really appreciate you listening. It's your host, Susan Bratton. Have a great day. Bye-bye. Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.